Good evening. I declare this ordinary council meeting of the 12th Alice Springs Town Council open for the transaction of business as set out on the agenda. Welcome councillors, officers, members of the public here this evening. I acknowledge the Central Arrernte people who are the traditional owners and custodians of Alice Springs, and I'll remind elected members that this meeting is being recorded and will be placed on the council's website. To start this evening, I'd ask you all to be upstanding, and I'd invite Dr. Steve Bevis of the Uniting Church to present the prayer for tonight's meeting.
Let's pray. Almighty God, we pray for all of our gathered here, those who are elected on this council, those who work for the council, and all living members who are present. We pray for your wisdom and for your justice to be present in this room. May the decisions that are made increase that which is good in our community. And may all who live in this town have a fair share and access to the blessings and prosperity of our common life. Amen.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Steve. Mr. Acting CEO, do we have any apologies this evening, please?
Yes, we have three apologies. Councillors Dave Douglas and Ellie Melky, and CEO Rex Mooney, all on personal leave.
Thank you. Welcome all members in the gallery this evening. And I ask if you have any questions for members of the council, of anything that's on our agenda or any other business of council, could you please use the microphone provided? State your name and address for the record. Thank you. Your name for the record. Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Hall. Aren't you also presenting the deputation this evening? Okay, I was just a bit confused when you went for a question. Thank you for that. Any other members in the gallery with a question? Do any councillors wish to disclose an interest with regard to any matter on the agenda pursuant to Section 70 of the Local Government Act 2008? In accordance with Section 67(3) of the Local Government Act 2008, I present the minutes of the ordinary council meeting held here 23rd of February and ask a councillor who was present to confirm that these minutes are correct record of the proceedings at that meeting to which they relate. Thanks, Councillor Kudrenko. Could I please have a seconder? Councillor Brown? Those in favour? Thank you. Any against? No. Any matters arising from those minutes which are not otherwise dealt with by committees? No. I present my mayoral report for the month of March, and I ask for a motion that this report be received. Thanks, Councillor Kudrenko. I have a seconder, please. Councillor Heenan, those in favour? Thank you. I now ask, are there any questions arising from my report? I will point out one issue that 113 and 130 have become a bit engaged. The gentleman's name was Milson Haywood and he only came in the once. So there was some mix-up with my calendar there that he appears in two places, although with a different Christian name. So any questions from that report? Okay, I'll move on now And I'll ask Deputy Mayor Benani to present her councillor's report of her community activities during the month just passed. Thanks, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor Ryan. I've attended the TCA meeting, Jess Hackett from Alice Springs Town Council's farewell, Sports Facility Advisory Committee meeting, the meeting with Police Minister and a meeting with the Minister for Police and Infrastructure for the Alice Springs Town Council, the Alice Springs Town Council Tree Farm. I've met with Jimmy Cocking from ALEC. I also met with Tanya Hall regarding the fracking issue in Alice Springs, the curfew meeting at the Alice Springs Convention Centre, the official unveiling of local artist Dan Murphy's Parenti. I attended the Family Fun Day at Yiparinya, and I did a tour of Territory Jerky with Councillor Douglas.
Thanks very much, Deputy Mayor.
Excuse me, through the Chair, am I able to ask a question about one of those meetings?
Most definitely, Councillor Kudrenko.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Benani, I wasn't able to make it to the curfew meeting. Are you able to give us an update of what was discussed?
Yeah, do you want to do that now?
Is that certainly permissible?
Okay. Well, I felt that it was a little bit disappointing after, I think there was around 900 comments on the Facebook forum, and really taking away all of the elected members and the CEO, Mayor, myself, Ellie, Steve. Who else was there? Council. There were probably maybe a dozen locals that were there. I expected there to be a lot more from the feedback that we received on the forum. There were still some good ideas put forward. There were a couple of people from local organisations who have put forward some ideas, but what will come out of that meeting is that a committee or sorts will be put together. I've put my hand forward, so have a couple of other councillors, but I feel there needs to be a stronger input from the public, because if it becomes just another town council committee, it could get lost and the feedback then is not filtering through to the community. So that's still yet to come to fruition, but it's happening. So Wayne Thompson will be a part of that. The Mayor has been given some names, and I've also been given some names of people that would like to be on that committee from that meeting. But I'm happy to share that with you if you'd like.
So is that an Alice Springs Town Council facilitated meeting?
Well, they've,
and subsequent committee? Or if not, who were the facilitators?
The facilitator,
because
was,
I hadn't actually received an invitation through council for that.
No,
one, I don't
believe. It came through the Facebook forum. So Wayne Thompson was the facilitator for that meeting. The CEO offered secretariat services and guidance. So it's not actually a town council forum. Steve might be able to elaborate, or Mayor.
So it's a concerned citizens at this stage?
Yes,
okay.
With some guidance from council. So, yeah. Does that
thank you.
Answer your question?
It's given me a good update. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. Move on to Councillor Brown.
I've had the usual round of meetings. The Sports Advisory. What else have I done? The Seniors Meeting. I think the Cemeteries Meeting. The planning forum, our planning meeting, I should say. Desert sports meetings by four. Have a meeting with the mayor. A couple of media, various media events, and also the curfew meeting. I think that's about it.
Thanks, Councillor Brown. Councillor Heenan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At the reception for the administrator, the Honourable John Hardy. AFL Northern Territory Central Australia season launch, a meeting with the Honourable Peter Chandler, also the some other committees that we are on was the meeting at Stewart Park regarding the cedar trees, and meeting with the at the tree farm. The Public Art Advisory Committee, the Regional Waste Committee, Tourism and Events Committee, and DCA Development Consent Authority, Tourism Centre Australia meeting when they had their meeting there, Sports Facility Advisory Committee, and that's it. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks very much, Councillor Heenan. Councillor Paik.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I attended my standard committees. I also attended a number of International Women's Day events, one of those being a dinner at Glen Helen, the official launch of International Women's Day, and a International Women's Day event which was held at the Star of Alice. I also attended the function with the Administrator John Hardy. My attendance was required as the alternative member on the Development Consent Authority. I had a meeting with the National Trust regarding the proposal for the Malanka site. I attended today the Day of Action rally, which was held at the Convention Centre. I also attended a meeting with yourself and members from the Joint Defence Force around potential Anzac Day events in the community, and that's been my standard. Excuse me. I also attended the Oxfam fundraiser barbecue ball this Saturday just past.
Thanks very much, Councillor Paik. Councillor Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've been away again, but I have done some bits and pieces on the telephone. I've referred quite a few people to the Place Names Committee. I've spoken to Jimmy Cocking about the fracking, Mrs. Diano a couple of times about the cemetery and some traffic management issues that she's having. Also some discussion with different community members regarding the curfew, and I was away, unfortunately, and couldn't attend that meeting. And I certainly would like to catch up on some of the outcomes from that. And also the women's shelter, I've had a couple of discussions with the new children's coordinator about the needs for the new children's room there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Councillor Martin. And Councillor Kudrenko.
Thank you. I did attend one meeting at the end of February before we rolled into March, and that was the Youth Advisory Group meeting, and that was the first one. And then in March, I attended the Development Committee meeting. I also attended the Alice Springs Town Council and Luritipa Aboriginal Corporation Steering Committee meeting. That week, I also met and participated in the Alice Springs Town Council and Tanindjira Council Steering Committee meeting. I attended the Public Art Advisory Committee meeting, the Regional Waste Management Facility Advisory Committee. I participated on the Community Grants Panel meeting. I also met with a local woman who's representing the NAPI Collective, which are working towards getting some resources together to donate to the women's shelter, and they wanted some advice on town council input. I also attended the Tanindjira Women's Committee Family Safety Project. So I attended their presentation and also their graduation for a number of women from town camps who were completing training in family and domestic violence, and also their resource launch. I also attended the two meetings with Minister Chandler in his role as the Minister for Police and also the Minister for Infrastructure. I was an apology for two meetings last week as I was away for work, so I wasn't able to attend the forum budget meeting, and I wasn't able to attend one of the Tanindjira Women's Safety Committee meetings either because of that. Also this month, I have received three emails regarding concerns and objectives regarding hydraulic fracking, and I'd like to table them tonight as they were sent to me directly. So if I'm able to send them electronically to Telly so they can be tabled. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Councillor Kudrenko. So we now move on, and I ask elected members and officers to provide any notification of matters to be raised in general business. We now move on to a deputation we're receiving this evening from Jimmy Cockting, the Director at Aridlands Environment Centre, and he's assisted by Tanya Hall from the Central Australian Frack Free Alliance Hydraulic Fracking. We will, although you know we've been in the room, we will follow procedure and we'll introduce ourselves to you, Jimmy, and I'll start with Deputy Mayor.
Hi, Jimmy. Hi, Tanya. Deputy Mayor Kylie Banani.
Steve Brown.
Brendan Heenan.
Paul Teller.
Jimmy and Ryan, welcome to both of you.
Greg Buxton.
Craig Catchlove.
Jade Kudrenko.
Liz Martin.
Chancy Pate.
Sorry? Whatever you're comfortable with. Oh, God, here we go again.
Oh, yep. So they're similar ones that were emailed around.
Oh, I've already got this.
So unless you've already had a look or haven't printed it off, it's working. Did you get anything like that? That might be easier, actually. That's better. Great. Tell you, should I just give you a wink or somehow to move the... So the title is Fracking's Too Big a Risk. I think this is the second time I've presented to council on this issue. I look forward to the day when I don't have to do it anymore. But until then, we'll keep on responding each time the government says it's a good and safe practice. We think it's too big a risk. So... The global context of fracking at the moment is a local global movement against it has led to bans in New York and Texas have both banned fracking in the States. In Europe, Scotland, Wales, France have also banned fracking. Germany's banned it for 7 years. And in Australia, there's moratoriums in Victoria and Tasmania for 5 years. 68 local municipalities have now opposed fracking, including two in the Northern Territory, both Katherine and Wagate Council. Next one. The current local context, excuse me, is that we've just had the Hawke report released, a very narrow focus of, in terms of reference, which very much we're all about getting gas out of the ground and not actually looking at the health impacts. Also, we've got the oil prices dropped 50% in the last less than 12 months, and that's having serious impacts as far as exploration goes and layoffs in South Australia and the Cooper Basin. The guiding principles that the Minister has presented, 23 pages of, and talking about a go-slow approach which is a new Northern Territory Government approach to gas exploration. While there are some great words in there, and if they were adhered to, they could reduce some of the risk of fracking, none of it's enforceable, and the companies know that, so they're just not going to comply as much as they would if they were enforceable. Also, the water allocation plan, which has been in draft for 2 years, has just been released, and the current iteration of that doesn't consider other users beyond what's beyond the town water supply. It doesn't include anything like fracking or mining use of water within the basin, so that's just something to consider. Next one. Fracking misinformation. And this one, yeah, we hear a lot. People say, we've been doing it for decades, it's fine, don't worry about it. It has been happening here. And hydraulic stimulation of wells has been going on for, I think, since the 67, it says there. And it's been applied to 33 conventional wells. And the difference is that we're talking about is unconventional gas, and that only commenced here in the Territory in 2011. Next. I drew this on, I think Kylie's seen this before. I drew this for a couple of people I've spoken to. If you have a look here, this slide gives a really good representation of the differences that we're talking about with hydraulic fracturing of conventional wells, being this very short little well into the ground, whereas you look at hydraulic fracturing of unconventional, it's a lot deeper. It's about 1.5 km to up to 3.5 km deep, and then it travels along for up to kilometres through the shale rock underneath there, and it's also using high volumes of water under high pressure and slick water, which involves chemicals and a whole bunch of other range of things to keep the keep the pipes lubricated and bacteria killed, and also to fracture that shale rock. The difference is, as we can see here, next slide, sorry, and apologies too, I've got a bit of a husky, woke up with a cold. Differences between unconventional and conventional is that with the conventional, you only have to frack it a couple of times and it will actually release the gas, whereas the unconventional, you're talking about depths that are a lot deeper and rock that's harder to crack open, and so they have to keep on fracking it regularly. It's up to some gas wells might be fracked up to 20 times in a lifetime. Thanks. And also the fact that they're using this greater pressure, which puts more pressure on the pipelines, as we see in the some of the presentations by government officials that have these layers of rock and of cement and steel. The issues are is that if we go on to the next one, what's happened here in the Northern Territory, 3 out of the 4 wells that have been fracked were actually compromised. And the one that happened up on the southern Georgina Basin, up on the Plenty Highway, that was Statoil, which is a Norwegian company. He actually was part of the delegation that came here. And since then, they've gotten out of that area up there, because what happened was when they did the frack, the steel casing actually... it was only a few metres underneath the surface, and that was because the steel was of substandard, and that can happen these days where you can buy some pipes and the pipes that will come over may have some faults in it. And that's when you're dealing with some of these high pressures, and a lot of this stuff isn't tested to those sorts of pressures, then we can't guarantee that failures aren't going to happen. And also hydrogen sulfide was detected as well, which once they don't know what is actually going to happen until they frack it and what gases come out. And hydrogen sulfide, that's that eggy smell, and it's also not very good to burn, because if you burn hydrogen sulfide with oxygen, you end up with sulfur dioxide. Mix that with water, you got sulfuric acid, and that's acid rain. All of those wells up there have been abandoned since 2014. Another fracking myth is that it can be done safely. There's lots of engineering issues that show that it cannot be prevented, even if best practice regulations are adhered to. At the moment, we don't even have best practice, so that's one of the big things that we're really concerned about. And also, yeah, look at the MacArthur River mine, for instance, where there's been a smoking pile of rocks there. They didn't realise that when they were digging that hole that they were going to find this pyrolite, which is a rock that ignites when it's brought into contact with oxygen. And so they don't really know what's down there. They can have some idea what's down there, but when you're dealing with depths of 1.5 to 3 kilometres deep, the uncertainties increase the further they go, because they just don't know what's going to happen. And so each time that they do frack, it is technically an experiment. One of the big issues people are worried about with fracking is the water. Where we have millions of litres of water, between 10 and 20 million litres used to frack a hole, or frack a well, between 20 and 80% of that will come back up. It just depends on the porosity of the rock in terms of how much will be absorbed. But that means that all these chemicals, that many of which aren't listed, but including benzene, not so much here, hopefully in Australia, it's not supposed to be using benzene, but there's a whole range of chemicals, up to 600 different chemicals that are used. And it's another issue that comes up is the heavy metals and radioactive materials also leach up through the well and into the rock layers once they've fracked the shale. So it's there's lots of reasons to be concerned about this. And also the issues with the wastewater is the fact that it's a lot saltier and it's essentially contaminated. So what they do out here at the moment is that they store it in evaporative ponds, they let it evaporate, and then what they've done in Queensland is they've reinjected it into aquifers. They also do that in the States as well. It's one of the big reasons for the increased seismicity in earthquakes that they talk about, is because they have been injecting it into back down the holes. And also other ways is that they partially treat the water and sometimes release it into waterways. And this is the reason why they got away with all of this, is because when in the US, the shale operators were actually exempted from the Clean Air and Clean Water Act by Dick Cheney back in the day, who was also a Halliburton official CEO back in the day. So you just see the way that this industry manipulates the political system to ensure that they get what they want. Next. Contamination of groundwater is what concerns everybody. Well, I think most people at least, anyway, who live here. That could happen from the failure in the wells, corrosion, and this was even in the Hawke report, they acknowledge that they don't know what they're going to do long-term with these abandoned wells once they've got the gas out of them, or even if they didn't get the gas out of them, what are they going to do with them in the long-term? And that's something that the government has not provided any information on. The Department of Mines and Energy are at a loss, and the companies, well, they'll walk away the minute it sounds like they're going to have to pay for the cost. Other issues are mainly the subsurface contamination, where that's where these ponds can be flooded from rain. We've also seen that that a lot of these ponds are only lined with a layer of black plastic. So that's not best practice, but that's the practice that's being used here in Australia at the moment. And there's also other issues here where we're seeing methane and other gases coming up in areas where they weren't before, like the Condamine River. And despite the fact that the gas industry talks about it being and a lot of these issues too is that we just don't know what's going to happen over time in terms of the heat underground, what sort of issues are going to happen with volcanoes or earth seismicity. So it is a big risk to leave these things in the ground for decades. This is a picture of just to really, you know, remind us all of what we're messing with when we do that sort of thing. It's fracking in a glass, really, and it's not a great thing to think about, particularly when you actually see it for real, what the fracking water looks like. Just on to the next one. This is just a news report about Santos CSG leaking, and I know that that CSG and shale are both very different issues, but when these companies were setting up on the East Coast, they were like, oh, look, you know, this isn't the same as what's going on in the States. This is shale, not, it's coal seam gas here on the East Coast, not shale. But then when they come here, they go, oh, no, it's not coal seam gas, it's shale. It's different to what's going on the East Coast. So we really need to just take these companies at face value and realise that they're just trying to make some money, and we're the ones that are going to have to live with this in the long run, and that we need to make sure that our water is protected. It's not, you know, to pay compensation after the effect is not good enough. We need to ensure that it's protected in the long run first off. Gas industry will create local jobs. Well, it shows that there's been studies done by the Australian Industry Report that showed that oil and gas contributes 0.2% of Australia's employee base. Jobs largely are required in the construction phase, and once they set it up and get the pipelines set up, most people that come in will be fly-in, fly-out specialised workforce, as we see in a lot of mining regions in WA and Queensland. This is only from a month ago in the Courier Mail. Once you sign up to these industries, we're essentially pegging our local economy onto the global market, which means that our economy will fluctuate with the prices. So when it's good, and when it's bad, it's real bad. And that's what's going on in the Surat Basin at the moment. Santos Origin Energy's laid off up to 1,000 people in Queensland. Santos is laying off people in the Cooper Basin. And sure, if the price goes up, or when the price goes up, you know, there might be the opportunities there again. But really, we need to be thinking about this when we think about the long term for this town and this region. We've got a map that a lot of people have been asking for lately to see what's actually going on around Alice Springs. And I'll also make this available as well to everybody, this PowerPoint presentation. Here we see Alice Springs. You can't see where I'm pointing, but we've got Alice Springs. And we've got a number of exploration licences that have been approved to the south and to the west of Alice, and they're all in the Armidaeus Basin. Literally, you can see that it goes right up to just outside of the water control district. But because we know so little about how our aquifers work out here and the interactions between different concentrations of salt, whether they're, you know, drinking water or stock water, even there's some of the aquifers that are saltier than seawater, we don't actually know how they interact and how they work underground. And if we start poking around and cracking the rock underneath, we're not too sure about what that impact's going to be. So we're concerned about all the fracking that's happening in this region, particularly around the Armidais Basin, but also the Georgina Basin, which you can see up there in the mid-right. That's where these wells that failed earlier on were at, and there's also a lot of activity out there as well. What do we need? Moratorium. No, we need a moratorium on fracking until it's proven safe in the future. We're really concerned with the fact that there's a lack of independent data to be able to peg any issues on, because that's what companies will always say, oh, well, it was always there, and unless we've got the actual data to be able to say that it wasn't always there, they can just walk away without any compensation. And also one of the things that we've been asking for, and we asked for this in the Hawke Review as well, is that all of the chemicals that are being used are fully disclosed. The companies use commercial in confidence as a means to cover up some of the chemicals that are being used. Now, when you think about it, it takes about 7 years for, let's say you hear on the news that there's been a possible cancer, you know, pill found or something like that. It takes 7 years of studies and animal studies through to human studies before that can actually be released onto market. Whereas what we're looking at here is that and putting it straight out to us, and we're, you know, the people's water's being tested on. Just the other day, I'll just diverge off a little bit. Well, we had a stall down here in the markets yesterday, and a lady from Queensland came along, and she was talking about how in Chinchilla, and that's where an underground coal gasification plant is, and Roma, in the area where she's from, how the place is completely transformed, and in terms of the workforce, are mainly all male coming into the place, so changing the dynamics in the town. A lot of the farmers have had to leave the land because of the gas companies buying them out. And then also the fact that that because there's been reports of pollution contamination in the aquifers, the properties aren't worth anything there as well. So this woman was in tears yesterday just telling us to keep up the good fight, because we don't want happening here what's happening in Western Queensland. Just on to the next one. Thanks, Talion. What we want is actually appropriate environmental impact assessment for exploration activities. Currently, a very short environmental management plan, which is looked at by the department, well, hopefully looked at by the Department of Mines and Energy, and may just go onto the shelf. We don't really know. But we think that the EPA should be more involved in fracking exploration at the moment. We need an overhaul of the Petroleum Act, the Water Act and the Waste Management and Pollution Control Act. Currently, mining and petroleum activities are exempt from both the Water Act and Waste Management and Pollution Control Act. And we've been, ALEC continues to make submissions to all the relevant authorities whenever an opportunity comes up about the review of these acts. And we need to make sure that compliance of the mine sites, is adequately resourced so that the companies are actually feeling that they've actually got to pull their socks up rather than just going, oh, look, they haven't been out here for 6 months, who cares, she'll be right, mate. And I don't think that's the attitude that we want for people who are messing around with chemicals in our water. We want to make sure that landholders, we just saw last week, the NT Cattlemen's Association have called out for being better consulted and wanting to be part of the negotiation process. Currently, the government says that they don't want that. They just want to have voluntary agreements rather than bringing it into force. Also, the fact that landowners don't have the right to veto, which is quite different here, in that the state actually owns the mineral resources rather than the people, which is different to the states. We also believe that there should be exclusion zones around water catchment areas, national parks, reserves, places of cultural importance, and communities where people are living. And we also, this money that's being spent, and currently the Territory government's got $8 million slated to support the gas industry. We think that that money needs to be put into renewable energy sources as a matter of priority. So this is just a quote. This is from Governor Cuomo, who's a New York governor. And he said he's not a scientist, he's not an environmental expert, he's not a health expert, he's a lawyer, he's not a doctor, he's not an environmentalist, and he's not a scientist twice. let's bring the emotion down and let's actually bring in the qualified experts. And so the next slide is actually what the expert who gave the health report to the New York governor. And he said, I've considered all the data and find significant questions and risks to public health, which as yet are unanswered, said Dr. Zucker. I think it'd be reckless to proceed in New York until more authoritative research is done. I asked myself, would I let my family live in a community with fracking? The answer is no. I therefore cannot recommend anyone else's family to live in such a community either. And that was part of the report that actually led to the New York governor bringing about a ban of fracking. And so Phil Johnson from Yale University said that if you don't have baseline knowledge, it's hard to do decision making, and it's hard to understand what future scenarios might be and respond to them. We're being told that we should just go slow, and there's no need for a moratorium. We think that that there needs to be. We also get that question of, well, the Alice Springs Town Council can't do anything about this because it's a territory government issue. But what the Alice Springs Town Council can do is represent its constituents and lend its voice to express concerns about fracking to the NT government. It can support calls for a moratorium on fracking in the NT or in the Armidale Basin where we source our water from. We could continue to promote Alice Springs as a solar city. And also another option as well is to make sure that your investments are not supporting those sorts of industries and making sure that it's invested in renewable energy as well. And I want to say thank you, and if there's any questions, very happily take them now or on notice.
Thanks for that presentation, Jimmy. Any questions for any members? Councillor Heenan.
Thank you. Jimmy, you said before that there was a radioactive material. Where'd that come from? Is that just naturally coming up from the when they're fracking, or is that I'm sure that wouldn't be introduced there, but where's that come from?
No, it's largely the uranium's naturally there anyway, and so sometimes that can get liberated up as they cross through the old paleo channels where the aquifers are, where the water is. So the uranium can come up through there, but also the radon gas. And actually, with the report that when I send this PowerPoint around, the report that led to the governor of New York making that decision, the doctor that I just quoted, they've actually got a whole bunch of radon studies where they've actually seen radon gas, which is an alpha radiation particle. So it's active for 3 days. You breathe that in, it can contribute to lung cancer and those sorts of things. It comes up naturally through the rock, but because it's being opened up to the surface from below the ground, the radon comes up. Radon can come up from any mining process, but if it's also located quite deep. So that's one of the big issues we've got. And there was also a study in Queensland where the guys were driving around studying radon gas that was coming out of fracking areas and found that there was a lot of radon gas around there as well. So it's one of those things that it doesn't get talked about too much, and I think that it's also one of the big issues, particularly for people living very close to these areas, whether it's remote communities or partialists, that they might be exposed to this. And I think that that's something as a regional centre we need to be standing up for our country folk as well.
Okay, thanks.
Maybe outside of the meeting you can. Thank you. Councillor Paik?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Obviously, I just wanted to say thank you for you guys coming tonight. I suppose personally I support the need to have an independent board for scrutiny, and I think we need to strengthen our environmental approvals. I just wanted to ask a question around what is the environmental impact if there's a leak in the... Obviously, if methane's getting into the air, that's a greater hazard, is that right, than burning fossil fuel?
Yeah, well, methane is more powerful fossil fuel. It's a more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. I think it's up to like 70 or 80 times from memory, is it? I think 70 or 80 times. So it just means that there's as more methane's released, it will actually contribute to global warming. And, you know, we just heard on the radio the other day that the Antarctic ice sheet's changing dramatically more than scientists thought it was. That concerns me, and I think that that's also another reason, which I haven't really touched on here, but I think that it's a really important thing for us to think about around fracking, is what's going to be that contribution to climate change and greenhouse gas emissions as well.
Thank you. Is that cover your answer, Councillor Payne?
Yeah, I just wanted some clarity around that, and obviously just to express my support in the need to strengthen those processes. Mm. And I also think that there should be some stuff done around the water allocation and whether or not that's extending the parameters of the Alice Springs water stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, there's no... Like, both Steve and I were both... Councillor Brown, we're both at the Alice Springs Water Advisory Committee meeting the other day, and we brought up that there was... Currently, in the current draft, there's no consideration of the risks and threats to water. But it was raised, and I think that hopefully they'll take it on and it will be considered in a new draft, because if it gets warmer, we'll use more water, we'll need more water. And as it gets warmer, we're going to have to, and as if more fracking and these sorts of things are allowed to happen, it will also, because it's not actually considered in the planning process for our drinking water, it's something that we should be taking on board, and we should be demanding this of our decision makers and the people who make these decisions in lands and planning and mines and energy.
Thank you for that. Deputy Mayor?
Thanks, Jimmy, for the information. It was very good. Touched on a lot of things that we've already discussed. There was something that I also mentioned with Tanya when I met with Tanya during the week. Have you had any further response from McDonald Shire on where their stand is on this?
They're next. we've spoken to them just in the same way that we came to council and spoke to council. And we didn't actually, like the first time that we came here and spoke about fracking, we didn't come here saying that you should be doing this, that council should be taking this approach. We very much just came to give information, and we've done the same to both the Central Desert Shire and also the McDonald Shire. And now that we've come here asking with some what the council can take, we'll be going and seeing both of those councils again in the not-so-distant future with very similar approach as well, potentially even the same presentation.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Kudrenko.
Thank you very much. Firstly, thanks very much for coming again to talk on this issue. I think it's been something that we've all gradually been learning about, so it's good to have both sides present. I know that Councillor Mielke made an indication last meeting that he's keen to pass a motion, so I'd just like to state my support for that, and I'll wait until he's back on deck, hopefully next committee, and I'll certainly be in support of that. And I appreciate the slide that you showed about what Alice Springs Town Council can do. Mm. And I would be hoping to work with Councillor Mielke to progress those points further. I guess I just have one question. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to answer. I was at Bush all last week. But prior to that, at the committee meeting, we did have the Director for Energy from the Department of Mines and Energy, Victoria Jackson, present to us. And, you know, she was quite open that in the Hawke report, it was quite clearly stated that we really need a robust regulatory regime to be confident moving forward with this particular process, and currently we have a very insufficient regulatory regime in place. And one thing that she did say, which I felt as though it was a bit of a, you know, but not to worry, she said at this stage they hadn't received any applications for exploration. And I'm just wondering, do you know if there's been any update on that, if there have been further applications for exploration?
The only thing that's happened that I know of since the release of the Hawke report was, and this was another breach of process, where INPEX, which are the offshore LNG developers that are operating in Darwin, they were given a tenement just in the Weso Basin, which is the new gas play, I think they call it, up in up north of Elliott. And so, was it in north of Catherine? But they were given that, just it was a Friday afternoon media release from the Chief Minister saying the whole use it or lose it policy is working, and that somebody had not been doing enough work out there, and they'd given this onshore license to INPEX without any no application process and no legitimate process for that to happen. So that's why we're here, because we people who are tracking this are watching the way that this the Territory Government is currently approaching it, and it is almost with disdain for the public in the way that they are going about it. They might be having some very open conversations with the gas and oil executives, but as far as the public goes, it's something that you would expect in a third world economy.
I guess that they're my two main concerns. One is I have strong concerns and objections around fracking occurring in the Territory and expanding, but secondly, a major concern of mine is the lack of process, clarity and consultation with the community, trying to represent constituents that have very clear concerns and objectives and not having a process in place to protect their point of view. He's of major concern
thanks,
to me.
Councillor Thank Kudrenko. Thanks, Councillor Kudrenko. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank
you. I'll move on now and call on committee chairs to deliver their reports on their respective committees from the meetings held on the 16th of March. And I will point out that this evening, I thank very much Councillor Heenan, Councillor Kudrenko and Councillor Paik for their service over the last year as chairs of the different committees. And at the end of this evening, they will hand over those chairs to others. So thanks very much. But first of all, I'll go to Finance and Councillor Heenan.
Thank you, Worship. I present the report of the Finance Committee held on the 15th of March and invite members to withdraw any items they wish to debate separately. Following this, I intend to move in the terms of the recommendations not so withdrawn.
Thank you, Councillor Heenan. Members, any withdrawn? Okay, then please.
I move in terms of 1, 2, 3 and 4.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder for those, please? Councillor Kudrenko, those in favour? Any against? Thank you.
This concludes my report. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks very much to Councillor Heenan. I note you'll be continuing in this job next year. I now move on to Corporate Community Services and call on the Chair, Councillor Kudrenko, to present her report.
Your Worship, I present the report of the Corporate and Community Services Committee held on the 16th of March 2015 and invite members to withdraw any items they wish to debate separately. Following this, I intend to move in terms of the recommendations not so withdrawn.
Councillor Pate.
Item 3, please.
Thanks.
Item 3.
3.6, is it? 3.C, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Item 3, wasn't it?
Okay. Yes.
Your Worship, I move then in terms of items 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 and 14.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder for those, please? Councillor Paik, those in favour? Any against? Thank you. Councillor Paik?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I withdrew item 3 because I recall at our last committee meeting the CEO was to go away and confirm, along with Councillor Brown, if we were proceeding with having a representative on the Water Allocation Committee, because we were questioning whether or not that committee was continuing going. So I'm just am seeking clarification. If that committee will be proceeding, we will need to nominate a council delegate for that committee.
Certainly, Councillor Paik. First of all, I'll ask Councillor Brown, did you attend this meeting since this committee meetings?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I did attend. The Water Committee seems to be up and functioning again, so I think the position is probably relevant. I think council should have someone on there. I believe I'm still actually the ministerial appointment.
It's a ministerial appointment?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and when does that cease?
I think it only ceases on the appointment of another member. And even though Councillor Melky stood for this position last year, I don't think it was ever actually ratified by the minister.
No. Okay. Then moving forward, I'll again go like we've done before, and I'll call for nominations for this position, and then we'll submit it to the minister. But in the meantime, it would seem from ministerial positions like place name committees, DCAs and all the others, it will stay with that particular person until the minister has ratified a change. So a call for nominations for that particular, the Water Advisory. Deputy Mayor?
Can I nominate Councillor Brown, please?
Okay. Would you accept the nomination, Councillor Brown?
Yes, I would.
Can I have a seconder for Councillor Brown, please? Councillor Heenan? Call for more nominations. Councillor Kudrenko?
I would like to nominate Councillor Paike.
Thank you. Call for Councillor Paike, would you accept that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, a seconder? Councillor Martin? Okay, then. Well, it'll call for a vote, which I think is pretty divided, 3-3. I would have to go with the sitting member in a casting vote for that matter, or you can bring it back to the next committee meeting when we'll have two of our other members who aren't here this evening. I can have a straw poll on that. Would you like to do that? Would you like to vote on it at the next meeting?
They're not likely to meet before then, are they?
Having met last week, but in whatever process, I think it'll take a while to go through the minister's office to come back with a change anyway from a ministerial position.
There is a follow-up to this meeting in 3 weeks.
Right.
And previous to that, there hasn't been a meeting for a couple of years, so your guess is as good as mine.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Brown. I'll go to Councillor Paike.
Oh.
No? Okay. Councillor Kudrenko? All right. So without putting it to the sword and by the look of a straw poll, it would be pretty much as it is. I propose that it's discussed at the next meeting with members' return. Could I get a show of hands of those who accept that?
Okay. Yeah.
Do the vote at the next meeting when we have more members. Those in favour of that?
Yep.
Okay, so we'll defer that one till then, Councillor Paike? All right then. You're happy with that decision for the rest now to go through?
I'm happy with the rest. I just thought that needed clarification rather than to be left unresolved.
So working off the Chair?
Before I move on, I did note that there is a leave of absence
that's in
requested for Councillor Martin. Is it worthwhile appointing...
Yeah, that's in the CEO's report, but we have two other members away on personal leave this evening as well.
So the personal leave that Councillor Martin requires will be for 6 months. Are there any committees that require a...
In positions that Councillor Martin's been put in? Didn't we put alternatives up as well for the ones that Councillor Martin did?
Everything but place names, isn't it?
But Councillor Martin has resigned from place names.
Okay.
To the minister... and the minister called for nominations across Legant, and a list of names were submitted. We haven't heard back from the minister as yet as to who he's chosen.
My apologies, I remember you gave that explanation.
No, that's all right. All right, so would you move...
Okay, then, Your Worship, I move then in terms of item 3.
Thank you very much. Can I have a seconder for that, please?
Yes.
Councillor Paike, those in favour? Any against? Thank you.
So that now concludes my report. Thank you very much for having me as Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Kudrenko. I now move on to ask Councillor Paike to present the technical services, and as I say, thanks very much for the last 12 months.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I present the report of the Technical Services Committee held on the 16th of March 2015. I invite members to withdraw any items they wish debated separately. Following this, I intend to move in terms of the recommendations not so withdrawn.
Thanks very much, Councillor Paike. Any items to be withdrawn? No. I'll go with that, Councillor Paik.
Your Worship, I move in terms of items 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 and 12.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder for those, please? Deputy Mayor, those in favour? Any against? Thank you. I move on to the CEO's report, which is noted there. First of all, before the recommendation there, the first part, part one, is recommend this report be received and noted. Could I have somebody move the first section?
Yes.
The CEO? Councillor Paik, thank you. Can I have a seconder for that? Councillor Heenan? Okay, thank you. And those in favour? Any against? Thank you. Now we'll move to the resolution, and this is an application made by Councillor Martin in relation to her health, and she has applied to the CEO for a leave of absence from all council commitments for the period 1st of April till the 1st of October.
Right.
Now, this doesn't...
No.
First of all, I was you did say you want to speak to the members, but you don't have to if you don't want to. No? Okay, then. I would ask you to leave the room then. Thank you.
Are you looking for a motion to support this?
Yeah, I am.
If that's the case, I'm happy to move that.
Thank you, Councillor Paik. I have a seconder for that. Councillor Heenan, those in favour? Any against?
I believe unanimous.
I understand this evening, with the apologies, this is a unanimous decision accepting or granting Councillor Martin a leave of absence and also, I would hope, a speedy recovery to health. So thanks for that. Please, Paul, if you could bring Councillor Martin back in. Now, as that's happening, I'll just go through that there were no special reports from the Director of Finance or from the Director of Corporate and Community. Although I'd like to ask about the new toy he's playing with, but maybe he'll tell us about that later. The new iPad. It does make noise like you're dropping water all the time. I can hear that. And also no extra report from the Director of Technical Services. Okay. Got anything to say on that one, please, Mr. Director?
Well, I've actually had this machine for a number of months now. It's the we're trialling it as the new IRD. So it's the basically it's a 12-inch tablet to look at solving the issue that we've had that trying to look at documents on the IRDs are very tricky. In that you either have to shrink them to fit the page and they're very hard to read, or you're forever scrolling left, right, up, down, etc. The only issue is that this machine is a Samsung, which means it runs on Android, and the AirWatch software, which handles all of our stuff, isn't as good for a Android machine as it was for the IRD. The main issues being the IRD latest software, you could rack up different documents, so it would have various tabs for various open documents, so you could go back and forth, which is obviously one of the big issues we had as well, that you could edit online with just scribbling all over things, etc., and save them. So we've kind of now got what I believe is the great tablet for use for an IRD. It's approximately, well, it's just very slightly short of an A4 in size, so very easy to read. One page scrolling, it's really good. The problem is the AirWatch software at the moment has taken us back a step from where we were, so we're kind of hoping the next edition of AirWatch will fix that up, and we'll then look at rolling out these new machines so that they do what we're after. So we've gone one step forward, one step back, and we're waiting for everything to get lockstep so we can move forward.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Director. Any questions without... Oh, sorry, Councillor Kudrenko.
May I ask a question on the new...
Certainly.
IRD, is that what we're still calling it? Some issues that I've noticed with our current IRDs are that we can't put tabs and notes on our documents. We can kind of put a tab, but not to great detail. Is that something that we're able to with this new device?
At this stage, I haven't played with the notes, but it's a separate kind of note system.
It's a separate kind of note system. But I haven't gone into too much detail on it because I don't think the current version of AirWatch for Android meets our expectations, so I haven't had too much of a play in that area because it's not planned to be rolled out as it is at the moment, because we do need to fix those issues to make sure the level of software we have does the job.
Can I ask, have you had the opportunity to look at Diligent Books?
I've brought it up with the manager of IT, and he's expressed the view that there are a number of systems out there which may do the job, but he was taken back a bit with the price that was quoted by yourself with regards to a licence.
The Diligent Books is being used by another board I'm on now, and I've got to say, I walk into a room with an iPad and I have the last year's knowledge. With Diligent Books, which I didn't have with our original IRDs, and my concern would be going forward. But it's got 24/7 support on Diligent Books. I'm really impressed, and really I'm a bit of a Luddite with this stuff. My children teach me, but I've got to say I found Diligent Books extremely useful. Oh, we've got to get the... through the director, asking questions, yeah.
Money's the big one. At $10,000 a seat, that's...
$10,000 one fee, not per person. No. The overall licensing... We have eight on this other board, and it was only the one fee. Yeah.
With that new costing, we might reassess.
Councillor Kudrenko?
I just had one other question regarding the IRD. One other issue that I've experienced with this one that I wonder if it can be resolved is that we don't have any access to web, which seems like a over-the-top limitation. So if a constituent sends me something with a link, I can't actually open it at my council email address. I have to forward it to my private address to open it on my private device. This is extremely cumbersome and sometimes means I miss out before coming to meetings on being fully informed. And it would just make the devices far more useful in terms of councillors being able to research information where they are with their device rather than going off and doing it separately. And I don't know if that's an AirWatch limitation or if it's within the settings of the device applied by IT. I don't know.
Through the chair, the issue is the lock status of the IRD. I have been discussing this with the CEO. He's not here tonight to overrule me. So I'll say that we are definitely investigating that. We're looking at... how we do things. The suggestion of the Mayor made at the last meeting and when we discussed this topic would appear to be the model that will be going down, which is an allocation. And if an elected member goes over that allocation of data, then they are responsible for paying the charges, that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Councillor Kudrenko, and also the Director. Are there any questions without notice? Councillor Martin.
Thank you. This is in relation to an issue we talked earlier. I think Deputy Mayor spoke about the Council's Curfew Committee. Is it Council's Curfew Committee? If it is, do we have a position? Have we set any terms of reference? And will it be interagency or is all that yet to be determined? I'm just curious because I'd like to know where Council stands on the curfew issue at this early stage of the debate.
Okay, if I could give you a bit of a summary the other night. Yes, it started out around the direction of a curfew, but I think only three people spoke on a curfew on the night. There was more concerned about the community, the youth community, or the fact, as Councillor Brown said clearly, the youth are our youth, they are our community. So I think the curfew or the hysteria around curfew disappeared very early in the meeting, and it was more about concerns of what can be done. Late in the meeting, when about six or seven community people had put their hand up that they would like to work towards a process of working out what we could do for youth and creating a strategic plan. There was a question from the floor from Wayne Thompson to ask the CEO whether we could work through with it. The CEO said yes, he would talk with him. The CEO, because of personal leave, things have been a bit out of whack since Friday. It is on the list when the CEO returns on Thursday, I think it is. So I have something more solid to mention to you that, late next week. But since then, I've done a bit of legwork because there were discussions around strategic plans and designing things. I've been on to members in different youth action groups around town. When I say youth action group, I always am surprised because that's what we called our group. But it's actually a coalition of people who provide services for youth, and they've already got some pretty strong strategic plans written. So with that process, I'd rather get them to come along and present to this loose coalition of people before people sit down and start designing a new regime. But it's up to Wayne Thompson and the people who put their hands up in the night. I think the CEO has already spoken to Councillor Paik and said there's no reason why he couldn't be involved. But I really wouldn't like to go any further with that planning until the CEO's back in his office and can do something in that area. So I've got three lights on. Got two. I'll go to Deputy Mayor.
Sorry, just to carry on, I agree everything with what the Mayor has just said. I've lost my train of thought, but I followed up. There was an interview with a lady that was on ABC, and she had said that she'd previously done a youth strategy previously, I think, for council. Can you remember who it was? Barbara?
Sorry, I missed that.
A lady that was on the ABC, she said that she'd previously done a youth strategy, like a document for this.
There are a few people who have said that.
Yeah.
So I have spoken to people in three different organisations.
Okay.
They're going to send me through what they've got.
Okay.
So there are a lot of people out there who... I mean, I think the real point on the night, if I could butt in, I'm sorry, Deputy Mayor, is the fact that there is only one service funded after dark in town. And that was an eye-opener for some, and that was an issue for others. So that's why a lot of goodwill was developed in that room that night as to how we can drive this system better. So the initial concept of what was spoken on social media were definitely not represented in the room that night. And I probably wasn't surprised, as you were, that those particular people didn't turn up because that's the nature of social media, I suppose. It's easier to...
Well, I thought there would have been a lot more people turn up feeling, you know, reading the comments and everything that were on there. But I think I agree. The feeling is, as Steve said, you know, to create that the harmony and to make sure that these children are being looked after. I've spoken with the lady from NTCOS, and she's given me their matrix. So, again, it's finding out what the organisations are saying that they are doing that aren't doing. And, yeah.
I don't think it's a matter that they're not doing them. I think that they're not funded, or resourced.
They're not funded for them anymore.
Yeah. But then, Councillor Paik, if there's... organisations that are funded for during the day, and there are a few of those, and then there's only one that is funded of a night time, don't you think that maybe they should be able to flip, you know, instead
But that's been a decision of government who funded it.
Okay.
I mean, the people
contracts.
Applied and said, I can provide this service, and a decision's been made whether or not to fund that. So right now, the decision is only to fund one after-hours scheme, but it's not a broad... ranging after hours scheme.
Yeah.
So I think what Councillor Paik is trying to say is it's that these people have all applied.
Okay. I get that.
And they're providing those.
I agree that there needs to be more service of a night time because that's where, you know, the kids are coming out or we're seeing them more. And, you know, when you're talking about young kids, have they had dinner? Have they got a place to sleep? You know, that's all I'm talking. It's just... And for my knowledge as well, I wanted to know what services these organisations are providing because I didn't know. So I'm informing myself. I think we all are, which is a good thing. So, yeah.
Look, I
I have personal issues or beliefs around the community forum that was held. I don't think you were going to get many people there to start with because it was only broadcast on one social media outlet page. If this is for the broad community, then you need to exhaust all avenues around advertising and encouraging to get people in the room. I appreciate that you're going to go on, but I just want to finish here. That is the problem. There are people who don't have social media. We're talking about young people. Young people need to be included in the process as well. How many young people were in the room?
They don't have social media because they do have social media.
No, sorry, can I jump
you're interrupting. What I'm saying is there are other people who don't have social media who didn't even know. Talking to them in the community, they didn't know it was on. So how open of a community forum?
All right, Councillor Paik, if I can just answer something. I went along there as a member of the community, not as the mayor. I went along as a member of the community like I believe most others went. This was something organised by somebody else. There was a direction by some which was rather odd, but there was a direction by others that are very keen to try and work with people. It was the first step in a process. It was good to see that a group of people said that they were interested in trying to work forward. Clearly pointed out in the first 5 minutes of the meeting was that it's all very well that we stand here and sit here and talk about youth. There were no youth in the room. I mean, it was interesting to sit with our YAG group the other day and understand their views. I mean, they were a bit awkward sitting there working on our new youth action group here in this room, yet they believed that we as a council were talking about a curfew, which, you know, it was a bit of an eye-opener to them as well.
But can I just say, that gets back when I sat in this chamber with that youth group and spoke about it. It is because the way that community forum was broadcast, it was about a youth curfew. So I'm saying if you want to continue this and grow this and get active community participation, it needs to be clearly articulated that this group is not pushing a youth curfew because that is something that I personally don't support in this chamber doesn't support at the moment. So we're misleading our own young people because they feel that by council or elected members going to these meetings that we are supporting a youth curfew.
Okay, thank you. And I'm sorry that's the way it seemed. I went along to ensure my views of not supporting a youth curfew were there. Now, that was with my views of going along. With a group of people saying they want to create something and then the CEO being put on the spot on the night, will you assist us with Secretariat? I mean, the CEO said, well, okay, I'll have a meeting with Mr. Thompson and we'll get all those people together. But clearly from there, we'll find out what direction. At this stage, it is not an Alice Springs Town Council-owned committee. It's a community group of people.
And I appreciate that wholeheartedly. And what I asked was, if it is going to become a committee of council, then obviously it will have to come to this chamber through the process to be authorised and we will nominate our people. I just don't want to recreate the wheel. The YAG, which is the Youth Action Group in the general Alice Springs community, do this work already.
And that's where it's very good if we can connect those people with these other people and we can all work forward as a group. You know the YAG, I know people in the YAG, but the people out there who are making noises don't know the YAG. So if we can get all of those together, we can achieve something as a community.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. As I was saying, though, I think before we go creating new committees, we need to have a discussion with the existing services.
Sorry, I thought I made myself clear before. I'm trying to do that and to be able to say to Mr. Thompson, these are the people that you need to speak with. These are the people who are doing this, this and this. I'm just trying to offer my hand like you do in the fact that being an elected member, you have a lot of networks that other people don't have. So that's what I'm trying to
offer. No, I appreciate that. And I suppose one of my concerns was to hear it being spoken about on the radio that council was how had created a new committee, left going, did we? I'm not aware of this.
No. And no councillors were invited to it. It was up to people individually to go to it. And that's what happened. I'll move on to Councillor Kudrenko.
I've got a couple of small questions. Firstly, who is Wayne Thompson and who did he represent?
Himself. He's just a gentleman who put a question into social media that was responded to by a lot of people. He's a businessman in the town. He runs a bus company. He drives youth to school every day of the week, one of the things his company does. He has a lot to do with tourism. He'd had some issues on the street of recent, so he asked, what do you do? Where do you go from here?
And before going to social media, does anyone know if he approached any of the organisations within the local youth action group?
I'm not claiming
anything.
Or did
he go to social media?
I don't know that. All I did was...
I'm quite interested in that because that seems like the most logical process if you're serious about making
change. He was asked that question on the night and he did approach and they didn't attend.
Who did he approach?
All right, he listed four or five, but I can't quote on his behalf. He was asked the question on the night, so maybe when we get Mr. Thompson, you'll be able to ask him that question.
I'd be keen to know that, and I particularly asked that because of your comment that there were no youth in the room and the YAG weren't represented there either.
Well, they weren't invited. You're talking about our youth organisation group?
No, I'm talking about...
Oh, sorry, no. He rang all the organisations he thought had something to do, but it was noted on the night that nobody accepted his invitation to come. Now, as far as that list is concerned, I would have to ask him to quote that to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's fine. I don't expect you to answer if they're... That's fine. I can follow that up. My last question is really that... I asked Deputy Mayor Benani for more information because I wasn't able to attend. I didn't receive an invitation, but I'm very interested in the subject matter. And I really welcome the fact that Alice Springs Town Council and the CEO on the night offered support and that in doing so, the Alice Springs Town Council are potentially accepting greater ownership of this issue that affects our whole community and young people due to the lack of services that are currently provided in town from the Northern Territory Government. What I would be very keen to do is to remain responsive and to keep in contact with Mr. Thompson and that group to hear more about that, but also rather than hear about it through social media, I'd be very keen to hear about it through the director and provide us with some further advice, especially if the council are going to be, especially if the council are going to be providing secretarial support, and that in the community it's now sort of starting to become an Alice Springs Town Council.
That's what we stressed we didn't want.
I'd be really keen to get terms of reference going, and I would encourage and support that. I think the more we can do to advocate for this particular issue, the better.
But
I agree.
I'll talk to you offline.
One other comment, just Deputy Mayor mentioned that she spoke to NTCOS and their matrix. I mean, they're actually not a service provider. They're a peak body who are an advocacy group.
Yeah, just to explain straight,
she can't be actually providing youth services.
No, a lady in the room said, I've got such and such. The question was asked of her, who do you work for? She said who she worked for. Yeah. Somebody else said, could I have a look at that? She said, well, I don't see any reason why not. Mm. So it sounds like the Deputy Mayor took her up on that offer and went and saw her. Mm. So that's where that's come from.
Yeah, we're just following up. I'm just trying to...
Yeah, I just wanted to make it clear because we do have media in the room. It sounded like the comment was what they do and don't provide.
No,
NTCOS don't actually provide anything other than an advocacy service, and they're an excellent source of information, so I'm glad you spoke to them because they're really the best in their field. They know what they're talking about.
If I could, Councillor Kudenko, I'm really thrilled at the discussion around it, but as it's clearly something that's happening outside, I would love to have a chat offline with when we have a break and everybody can put their two bob in. It's not really a council responsibility at the moment, but we've offered some services secretariat-wise, and I will keep you in the loop on that. And it will be very interesting to see whether the people on the night who said they wanted to be part of it, whether they attend. So that's where I've got to on that.
It wasn't a hostile environment at all. Jade, it was really just people...
I think it was. That's why I'm saying I welcome it.
Yeah,
it's great.
It was good.
Yep. Mm.
Are there any other questions without notice? Councillor Paik.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just wanted to ask a question around the Liberty Swing. I note that on the 11th of March it was relaunched, and I've just been asked by a few members from that group around myself and Councillor Benani's Deputy Mayor's non-attendance at that event, and I was just going to request that in future if we could be invited to attend those things. Deputy Mayor Benani and myself worked quite hard with the group and lobbied to to get that stuff up and running and the future of that. So I would in future like to be included in anything that...
We'll check whoever sent the invites out. But I think it was a bit surprising on the day there weren't any councillors because invites had gone out. So
Just making it known now to the to everyone that I didn't receive an invitation, and I was quite distressed that I was kept out of the loop on that process.
Okay. Can I say, and to point out this, the officers in council get very disappointed with the non-answering of invitations that go out. Now, we don't get 100% response all of the time. It makes it very difficult when they send requests out. So is there a better system people want? Is a text better? Because email doesn't seem to work with everybody.
I think the calendar invites where we can add it straight to our calendar are fantastic. I agree with Councillor Paik. I did not receive that. I pretty much acknowledge all and accept my... and they're put in my phone straight away. So that one was a bit of a shock to see that, you know, a lot of us had worked hard on that and work with the community, and I'd been to quite a few people's homes in relation to speaking about that Liberty Swing. So to see that that had gotten up, I agree with Councillor Paik. It would have been good for us to just know.
I think it was spoken in council a couple of nights before that it was happening. We were very happy for Ingerica to take on all of the responsibility because Ingerica were the ones who did the work. They were a great company to work with.
Yeah.
And I just think that the response from young Alex in the images that our media officer put out was a great result.
Yeah, no one's saying it's not a great result. It's just that there were a lot of us that worked on that as well. So to know...
Well, everybody works on everything in the organisation.
Yeah, look, what we're trying to say is it's very disheartening when we worked very hard with the group and then the group come back and say, where have you been? Like, we only had Damien there. It would have been good to have you.
I turn up to every event
in
my calendar.
And I'm just telling you there's not a problem with responding to invites. Yeah. It's the invite didn't come through.
Okay, thank you. So I'll make note of that. Councillor Kudrenko?
Your question was, are there any suggestions about the system?
Yeah,
this is an IRD-related thing. I just noted last week when I went away, I was concerned about requiring quick response, and I know there were some licensing requests that also came through.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried very hard to set up an out-of-office on my council email address so that at least the officers would be aware that I wasn't and why I hadn't replied and when they could expect me to reply, rather than just silence and no answer for a week, and that wasn't something that I could find as an available setting, and I tried quite hard on the Sunday before I went away to set that up and couldn't. So that would be an excellent feature that would at least allow back and forth.
Yep.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Councillor.
Also, you said before, if we could have a text as well, just because sometimes we might not get the email properly and it might be a day or two, but if we could get a text... would be fantastic. Then everybody's got it on their phone straight away. Then any invitations,
all right,
like
but
that.
Then they need a reply to them straight away.
Yes,
too.
Yes.
So if the executive assistant of either any of the directors, if they have a function involved, if they were to get them to send out a text to you the day before, you'll all come back to them with an answer.
Yes, yeah, that'd be good. Thank you.
All right. How's that sound, Mr. Director of Corporate and Community?
We'll look at that and try and get a system up that'll do a simultaneous text and email. So.
Okay.
But we will be maintaining the Outlook calendar invites, won't we?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes, it does.
I never send a separate email to say, yes, I'm coming. I just click accept.
The only reason I text you or whatever is I get to go to a function and I ask, has anybody responded?
Well,
and I get told... No. I get told by the officer. It doesn't come to my desk.
Yeah.
And I get told, no, Damien, nobody's coming. So I then go and send you a text and say, are you able to come to this? Because I stand up there...
Because I've got... Everything I get
Yeah, okay. But the reason I ask you is when I go to the different executive assistants and ask who's coming, it's like the citizenship 2 weeks ago. I was only told of three people coming. So that's why I send out and I go, what's going on? You know, I've got to stand up the front and say, I have an apology from Councillor so-and-so, 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 or I've got to say, I welcome them, and then I look around the room, they're not there. So that's why I send out those texts.
Us tonight, if we're all doing that, we're adding it, we're saying it's obviously not our end. It's the
not me.
No, it's not.
No. Yeah. So then if I'm doing that, I need you to go to that whoever that director is and say, why has Damien asked me to do this? I've already replied to you.
If I get that, when I get on the council iPad there, sometimes I can't open it up and accept and reply. Okay, I occasionally can, but not every time. So something wrong with that as well.
If you have that issue again, if you can let us know, we can try and troubleshoot. The only quirk of the system, the Outlook system, is that the only person who can check who has responded is the original the originator of the invite. So. Whoever sent the invite should know. That's exactly right. You can look it up. It's a click in there. It'll tell you who's said yes and has accepted.
Are you checking with Telly? Is Greg checking with Joe? Is that happening? If we're all accepting, they need to be getting our feedback.
I have no idea who Damien was asking the question of.
Well, I usually go to the person running worship. The event and say,
Yeah, they should be able. They should be able to. I don't know if they have. I don't know the particulars. So, but the system is such that, yes, the person who sent the original invite can check who has accepted and who has declined and all those kind of things. So do we still want a text message or we're...
I'm fine
with the
shelter, but don't get
Okay.
Thank you. Any other business? If not, we'll move forward and the next ordinary meeting will be in this chamber on the 27th of April at 6 p.m. So there being no other business, I ask for a motion to adjourn to confidential section, please. Councillor Brown, seconded Councillor Heenan. Those in favour? Thank you. And we have about a 20-minute break.